Hello, this is George Kaywood from Handicapping.com. Welcome to this podcast, which is the second in a series featuring Hall of Fame trainer Jack Van Berg. In January 2010, Jack was the featured guest at the Pick More Winners Handicapping Seminar Series, hosted by Mike Crattville and Johnny Ray Gomez at Horseman's Park in Omaha, Nebraska. I arranged to record the session to preserve Jack's talk and present it for all horse racing fans to hear via podcasts on Handicapping.com. So special thanks to Horseman's Park. It's one of the best simulcast facilities in the United States and features several days of live racing every summer that are fun and exciting. Be sure to take a look at their website at www.horsemanspark.com. Horseman spelled H-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-S. On this podcast, I asked Jack about the current state of drugs in racing and how much it can affect handicappers. Kevin, a former employee in the Van Berg stable, gives fans a no-holds-barred look at one part of prepping a runner that most fans aren't familiar with, and he also asks about what's changed over the last 30 years in getting a horse ready on the day of a race. And Jack talks about the best horse he's ever seen on a racetrack and great horses in racing overall. We start with a question about what Jack learned from his father, Marion, who was also a Hall of Fame trainer.
I was just going to ask how much you, living in Columbus, how much you learned from your dad. I heard stories about your dad playing a lot of horses and moving them up. That's way before my time. But what did you learn from Marion?
I learned everything that I know from him. My father was a genius with horses. He was a perfectionist. In the old days, he would have Otto Durkup and Joe Pedraza, a couple of Polish guys from Platt Center, and they had hands, and each other's hands would be, one of them would be as big as both of mine, and they'd rub them old horses. Dad would set a Big Ben alarm clock for 15 minutes, and he'd make them rub them horses. When the alarm went off, he'd go down and say, now put the bandage on. And I've had grooms work for me. If I got one of them I raised over here, you might go down there, and they'd be sprinkling the alcohol bottle in the bandage after they put it on. You've seen a lot of that, haven't you, Kevin, the boys that work for us. But Dad was a perfectionist. He stayed on thing, and he had an eye for a horse that's unbelievable. I was good enough to, the good Lord, give me a little bit of that eye, not like him. It's like I told boys that worked for me when I got done, if they didn't know how to train a horse because I told them everything, just like my dad, I learned from him. If they didn't know how to train a horse, they're too dumb to do anything else because I told them and showed them everything we did. I found out the older I got, the smarter my dad got, I'll be honest with you. When you're young, you think you're intelligent. You don't want to listen to your parents. I had a horse here one time, sent in here called Noble Greer. Dad came to me as a good three-year-old. He was sore. Dad come to town. He said, we'll work that horse. I said, Dad, he's sore. He said, put him in a set of ice boots for a couple hours. We'll work him. The horse working 58 and change. That was fast here at Exarvin. We're back there cooling him out. And I'd been telling him about he's sore in his shoulders. He said, if you fix what's under his shoulders, he'll be okay. So we worked him. He worked fast. He's out there cooling out. Probably a good lesson I ever had. He comes around the shed row and he said, son, he said, did you happen to get that ice up on his shoulders? I describe this to people. Like you'll see a football player that sprains his thumb and he can't even play football. You'll see the next one come along and he'll have a broken hand and he'll still be playing. Horses are the same way. The pain threshold is not the same. Legs was good. They were cold, but he just had a little pinch. His knees pinched him a very little and he just didn't extend himself till you put him in ice a couple hours. Then that was enough to take it away. So everything I learned was from my father, and he would give you enough rope to hang yourself, then tell you how dumb you were when you got done. You know, I got a video right here that I did an hour show of a lady. It was about Hollywood Park and closing down and what it would do to the racing in California and everything. She said to me in the interview, she said, well, what would you call your father? Was that tough love or what? And I said, well, let me tell you this much. I don't think that my father ever told me he loved me. Never. You knew he did because he did things for you, do things for you. And he'd work you till you got so mad you wanted to bite a nail in half, and then he'd make you feel bad because you got mad at him. But he just had that way about him and teaching you things, and he'd let you do things. But he was great to tell you when you got done and made your mistakes how dumb you were and you needed to get things together. He was the greatest influence, and I have tried to pass that on to everybody who worked for me to because I did have a benefit. I had the best teacher in the world.
God bless. Let's give that a nice round of applause.
If you guys go out on YouTube and put in Jack's name, there's about a 10-minute interview of Jack that was on, I think, TVG that talks about Jack and his dad. Download it, at least listen to it. It's about 10 and a half minutes long.
Jack, last year, 2009, racing really got beat up in the national media. It seems that every time you turn around, there's a story about drugs or animal abuse. Animal abuse notwithstanding, the stories about the drugs in racing and all the variations that have come along last year seem to be almost over the top for me. You've been around this game a real long time. What's the current state on drugging and racing, and how much do handicappers have to worry about it when they try to look at the race the day before the day of the race?
George, I went to New York and I testified before Congress about drugs, about steroids. The baseball, as you know, the ones they've caught with steroids, it was the home run kings, can't hit the ball like they did before. The quarter horse people brought steroids into the thoroughbred business. A horse can't say no. They just give them steroids. I watch them day in and day out. I'm against all of that. I think if you're not a good horseman, the horse should come first. Nowadays, the training, the modern trainer, these young guys, the veterinary bill at the end of the month is almost the same as the day money for training. And it's sickening. And I ride between the barns at Hollywood Park and Santa Anita. The veterinaries are out there jogging the horses in between the barn, taking a look at them. And then you come back by the next set of horses and they've got their tray full of stuff to go on the cortisone and stuff. And the veterinaries with these young fellas are the ones that's doing the training anymore, I can be honest with you. To me, they should stop all drugs, none whatsoever, no tolerance whatsoever. They've got it so bad that they don't do anything to these people anymore. They get it, they get a lawyer, they stop it, and nothing happens to them. And I've watched it go on and on. When I'm doing my handicapping there in California, I like to play a little pick-six ticket every day. But I go by who's hot and who I think's done something new or something and come up with something. You got to watch that, and I think it's pathetic because your horses can't say no. I watch these guys when the steroids were heavy out there, they give them steroids. Then they give them tranquilizer pills to train them in the morning. You give them azepromazine pills in the morning. To me, if they had a testing thing like they do for the Olympics, for the thoroughbreds, it'd be better for everybody. I used to have a stable in New Orleans. They were on Butte and Lasix down there because you use it. You go to Hot Springs, they had no medication whatsoever. Those same horses would go to Hot Springs, race just as good or better without medication. And I think your medication, you know yourself, with the human doctors, get people on medication, what happens to them? They end up going by the wayside, the more damn pills they take. And the horses are the same way. And I think that if they stop every bit of medication and no tolerance, because the minute you give them a threshold level, they'll find a way to get her by it and cheat you. They stop the clenbuterol. They found out if you give them 35 ranitidine pills at 5 in the morning, you could cover up the clenbuterol. They'll always figure a way that they can get by. Some of them guys just spend all their time studying what they can do.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do have another question right back over here.
Jack, good to see you.
Good to see you, Kevin.
I worked for you 35 years ago, and the first job you gave me in the afternoon when I came back one day was Ice and Joey Bob's Nuts. And I thought it was an initiation that was taking place at the barn, but his balls were as frozen as my hands were. I understand why he set the track record that day. All the preparation that went into the training process, the turbulator, the shoulder massagers, the vibrators, all the bandaging, I noticed on the backside now that doesn't really go on anymore. Is that what you're referring to as far as the medications and things that offset Olympic-type training that you put into the horses?
Kevin, there's no more truer words spoke than what you just spoke. Start with number one, my dad never raced a stallion without icing them 30 to 40 minutes before they went over to make them shrivel up so they weren't swinging between their legs. I mean, every stallion we raced, he had you ice and sit under there and hold it. Nowadays, we had the turbulators, we had the vibrators, and that you don't see any of that on the backside anymore. And it's all the veterinaries that do it. And it's unbelievable what them veterinaries make. I mean, their bill on each horse will be between $2,500 and 3,000. I sent three horses over to another trainer because I had the owner crying and moaning and groaning. I said, try somebody else if you're not satisfied. Vet bill for 45 days on those three horses. Trust me, two of them never had a pimple on them. They're as good as the day they're born. It was $8,700 in 45 days. Wow. So that's what it's come to nowadays. And there's 37 veterinaries on the backside of Hollywood and Santa Anita. Used to be seven when I started in California.
You open up the racing form every day, and like you've got horses in, I think, the first and the ninth race at Santa Anita today, and they've got your trainer stats. Maybe what we ought to do is make sure we have vet stats in there, because maybe they're as important as anything.
They're probably more important than the trainer stats, I can tell you that. The only way they're going to stop it is to stop all medication, and if you use it, you pay the consequences, that's all. They run you down the road, and that's the only way you're going to stop that, because this business is slapping on the hands. They'll try something else.
Jack, not counting your horses, you've had some great ones. Ali Sheba, if you'd answer. Who's the best horse that you ever saw? Who's the best horse you ever raced against?
I think this mare, Zenyatta, is the best mare I've ever seen in my life. I don't think I've ever seen a mare do what she can do and how she does it. I just think she's something that's unbelievable. Not because I trained Ali Sheba, but he was as good as any horse that ever come down the road as far as I'm concerned. He set three track records, three different tracks in the United States. In the Belmont, he should have won the Belmont. I told Chris McCarron to go to the front. He'd be in step. He looked at me. I said, Chris, he'll be in front every step of the way today. He can gallop faster than these horses can run. He looked at me like I fell off a banana wagon. He broke two in front. He choked him the whole way and run up that horse's rear. A year later, when he set the track record in the wood, he came back. He stands up in the saddle. He said, Jack, this SOB can gallop faster than he can run. I said, you're a year late and $5 million short, and I already spent my percentage. So he goes, Secretariat was a great horse. I don't think that you can compare horses until they run against each other three or four times, five times. Horses have good days. I run horses right here at Exarban for 2,500 claim, and Detroit both, that they run faster than the handicapper the allowance race did in the afternoon. So when a horse gets on the lead, he gets a motion, and I describe to people like bowling. If you go bowling with somebody and you throw five strikes in a row and they have spares and miss a few, you're just breezing along. But if you both have five strikes in a row, you start to get tense and everything. Horses are the same way. When they're eyeball to eyeball, they use a lot of energy, burn up energy. It ain't like when they're out there rolling by themselves. I think they have to race against each other four or five times and then see what that heart is behind them.
Thank you so much. Jeff?
Hey, Jack. With over 6,000 victories, I'm curious, over those 6,000 wins, was it more difficult to manage the owners or the horses? And do you have any interesting owner stories you'd like to share with us?
I've had a lot of good owners. Fabulous owners. It was as good a friend as you could ask for. And I've had a lot of them were real SOBs too. Nowadays, it's got worse. If you look at the form on these horses in California, they change trainers like they change their underwear. There might be a horse in the form and he's had five, six, seven trainers on his chart. And they just go out there. If you have a bad test, they flock to you out there. It's a different ball game, and then nowadays they want to do their computer work. They want to come to the barn. They want to tell you what the horse should do or what he should be doing. They call you up and say, I didn't see you work that horse. Is there something wrong with him? Well, I win the Queens here with Targa. She was 93 days without a work right here in Omaha, and her and Carlos Enough run a mile and eighth head and head every step of the way, and she beat her nose or her head. 93 days. The stewards in California, if you don't have a work within 30 days, you can't run your horse. They make you show a work. You have on their computer now, your owners call you up and say, you didn't work that horse. What's wrong with him? Why did you work him? He should work. It's been 6 days. He should work. I don't work my horses like that. I can gallop them. I can gallop them 2 miles, let them pick it up the second mile, and they're just as fit as anybody's horses. You just tear them up when you're working, as far as I'm concerned. But it's a lot more difficult today to train for people than it was back in the other days.
On the next podcast in this series, Jack Van Berg talks about workouts and shipping horses to different tracks, the effect of extreme hot and cold weather on horses, top horsemen he's worked with and who have worked for him, jockeys, racing in the Midwestern United States, and offers a little bit of philosophy on raising children. Be sure to tell your racing friends about Handicapping.com's free podcasts. This podcast was made possible with the permission of Horseman's Park, Omaha, Nebraska, www.horsemanspark.com. Copyright 2010 by Handicapping.com. All rights reserved.